The body paint is still wet when the police truck slows at the edge of Halfway Tree. A wall of sound is rolling up Constant Spring Road right now. Rhythm sections on trucks, soca and dancehall colliding so hard that the air feels like it is shaking. No one watching this in March 2026 is being told that this carnival in Jamaica only got a name and a brand in 1990. No one is thinking about why a country with John Kanu, sound systems, and the memory of revolt waited centuries to call this thing carnival. A man in the crowd is wearing a cowhead mask that does not belong to Trinidad Mass at all. The cameras barely catch him. Most people don't notice. That mask is the unresolved detail that shouldn't be here. A throwback to an older Jamaican festival language that was never supposed to survive into this Soca-branded, sponsor-approved road march. It moves through the crowd like a glitch in the simulation, asking a question no one answers yet. To see how we got here, you have to strip the branding and the beachfront flyers away. Before the brochures and the drink-inclusive wristbands, Carnival was the last blowout before Lent in Catholic Europe. French and Spanish colonizers carried that calendar into the Caribbean, along with masks, balls, and parades. They wrote rules about who could dress up, who could dance, and where those bodies were allowed to move. Enslaved Africans watched the spectacle, served in it, and quietly peeled pieces off. Over time, they began to stage their own processions, not as a polite copy but as a weapon and a shield, slipping African drumming, masking, and spiritual work into a season that the planters thought they owned. On islands like Trinidad, this changed the festival from the inside out. In the late 18th and early 19th centuries, nighttime gatherings around the cane fields, tied to the practice called Kanbulai, turned the plantation itself into a dangerous stage. Torches lit up the edges of the estates, drums carried across the dark. Bodies moved in patterns that belonged to neither Europe nor the plantation timetable. To the colonial eye, this was unruly, even criminal. To the people inside it, it was a rehearsal for freedom, a way to bend the geography of power for a few hours. When authorities tried to crush these processions after emancipation, clashes erupted. The price of marching with drums into the streets was blood, arrest, and regulation. Jamaica's archive tells a different story, but the pattern underneath is the same. The name on the festival is John Kanu, not Carnival. It arrives each Christmas with masqueraders, cowhead masks, soldiers' uniforms, satin-clad figures, and a noisy band of drums, fifes, and homemade instruments. The written record calls it African, heathen, comic. Planters pretend it is harmless entertainment for people whose lives they own. Missionaries complain about noise and irreverence. Yet all the alarm bells are there, men in uniforms marching like officers, masked figures charging, fainting, forcing respectable people to step aside, drummers driving a beat that does not care about plantation schedules. Imagine the scene in a Jamaican town in the late 19th century. It is hot even in December. Dust and heat rise off the packed road. A John Kanu band comes through. A cowhead charges children who scream and laugh, half afraid and half delighted. A set girl dances in layers of cloth and beads, twisting a stylized European dance into something that feels like mockery. An old woman claps and sings along. A white overseer watches from a doorway, arms folded. He will later claim this is proof that the people are content. He will not record the jokes told in patois, the nicknames for planters hidden in the songs, the way the crowd watches his reaction and adjusts the performance. That is the template. Africans and their descendants take a space allowed by power. Christmas pre-Lent, a so-called holiday, and turn it into a moving conversation about who really owns the street. They bring masks that carry ancestral echoes. They add characters that parody authority. They use the temporary license of festival to say what cannot be said in court. Now put that beside Kingston in 1990. For most of the 20th century, Jamaica did not have a capital C carnival like Trinidad's, even though it had John Kanu, street bands, and a music culture that shaped the world. That absence becomes its own historical question. Why did an island with such a fierce Afro-Jamaican festive language not immediately embrace the imported carnival template? Part of the answer lies in class and respectability. Governments and elites often preferred folk displays that looked contained and traditional, while formal carnival was associated with other islands. Part of it lies in timing. By the late 1980s, Trinidad Carnival had become a global brand, a commodity as much as a ritual. That is when Jamaica steps in. Byron Lee, already a veteran bandleader whose Dragonairs moved fluidly across ska, calypso, and soca, understood that carnival was not just a local ritual but an engine of money, media, and regional identity. He had played Trinidad stages, watched the bands on the road, and seen how this festival could capture both local passion and tourist dollars. In April 1990, after months of planning, Jamaica's first big modern carnival season launches in Kingston. There are fetes leading up to the main road march. There are costume bands designed for visual impact, not historical accuracy. Critics mutter that Jamaicans are too rooted in dancehall and reggae to care about soca. They are wrong. On road day, hundreds of thousands pour out. Picture that first big road march in the present tense. The trucks are rolling down Constant Spring Road. Speakers are so tall, they tilt against the sky. Costumed bodies pressed together, sweat and glitter mixing on bare skin. The rhythm is fast, Trinidadian-style soca that demands forward motion. But every so often, the selector pulls a surprise. A reggae rhythm slips in. A familiar dance hall beat lands under the feathers and beads. The crowd breaks into a different kind of movement. For a few bars, Kingston feels like itself again, then the soca returns and the band surges forward. Uptown professionals dance next to working-class revelers, the usual class boundaries blurred, but not erased. Policemen walk the flanks, not as masters, but as regulators, trying to keep chaos within acceptable limits. From that point on, Jamaica Carnival is no longer an experiment. It splinters and grows. Promoters form new bands. Corporate sponsors realize that branding a truck in carnival season means thousands of moving billboards on the evening news and the internet. Tour operators bundle carnival packages with hotel rooms. Flyers and social media posts sell Bacchanal in Jamaica as a lifestyle. Sun, music, rum, and bodies in motion. The language around the festival shifts from resistance and emancipation to vibes, escape, and experience. That does not mean the older currents are gone. They simply move under different names. When a band chooses a theme like warriors, goddesses, or Africa, costume sketches reach for generic symbols, golden shields, animal prints, tribal patterns stripped of specific roots. On one level, it is surface-level exoticism for the camera. On another, it is something more complicated, a marketplace version of African memory, flattened for sale, but still drawing on its power. The problem is not that this is forbidden. The problem is that the line back to actual African masking societies, to specific ethnic traditions, to the work those masks did in community life, is rarely explained. All of this collides with 21st century urban governance. In March 2026, carnival season in Kingston is not just a spontaneous eruption. It is an object of policy. Municipal bodies review applications for road parades, negotiate with event organizers over garbage collection, debate whether the routes can pass certain hospitals or through certain residential areas. Emergency services run simulations. After Hurricane Melissa, any event that brings large crowds into the streets has to prove it will not overload fragile infrastructure. The festival is folded into documents, permits, and emergency plans. In the middle of that bureaucratic apparatus, the bands still have to move. A micro scene. Midday, the sun hard and white overhead. Feathers wilt. The asphalt reflects heat back into every joint. A group of dancers near the back of the band has slowed to a sway. Sweat streaks through body paint. A sanitation worker, already on shift, watches from a corner with a broom in hand. His job is to clean up after the band, but his shoulders move to the beat anyway. For him, carnival is work and release in the same hour, overtime pay, and a moment to remember that the road is not always controlled by traffic lights and buses. This is the point where it helps to say plainly what is happening. Jamaica Carnival today is both an Afro-Caribbean cultural practice and a heavily marketed regulated industry. It sits on top of centuries of African survival and resistance, especially in festival forms like Jonkanoo. It also sits inside a modern economy where governments and corporations need it to be safe, profitable, and photogenic. Those two realities pull against each other every time a band applies for a permit, every time a sponsor dictates what can and cannot appear on a costume, every time a resident complains about noise while a reveler insists on the right to take the street. The unresolved cowhead mask in the 2026 crowd is part of that tension. It should not belong in a Trinidad-modeled carnival band, yet there it is, a quiet echo of Jankanu inside the glitter. The person wearing it might not call it a political act. They might just be honoring something they saw as a child, or something a grandparent told stories about. But that choice places an older Jamaican festival logic inside a newer imported frame. It is a question, moving on two legs, what has actually survived and what has just been repackaged. Zoom out. And Jamaica Carnival is one node in a global circuit. Carnival seasons now stretch across the calendar and across the Atlantic. Migrants who grew up in Port of Spain or Kingston bring mass skills to Notting Hill in London, Carabana in Toronto, and Labor Day on Brooklyn's Eastern Parkway. Designers build costumes in one city that will be worn in five others. DJs carve out careers hopping from island to metropolis, playing the same rhythms for different accents. The underlying story is the same. Afro-diasporic people using the festival to build temporary homelands in hostile or indifferent places. In this wider frame, Jamaica's late formal adoption of carnival is less an anomaly and more a strategic move. The island is already central to Black Atlantic sound. By adding a branded carnival season, it plugs its street culture into the same circuit that moves people and money between Caribbean islands and diaspora cities. The risk is that the Jamaican-specific threads, Jankanu, Mento, the particular ways Jamaican bodies whine and move, get blurred into a generic Caribbean party image designed for Instagram and tourism boards. As the 2026 road march nears its end, the light begins to change. Trucks slow for the last corner. Costumes sag. People tug off headpieces and hand them to friends. A few revelers step out of the band and walk home barefoot, heels dangling from their fingers. Garbage is already piling up along the curb. Heels dangling from their fingers. Garbage is already piling up along the curb. Behind them, police and sanitation crews move in like a second procession. Quieter, methodical. The city will be restored to its usual rhythms before dawn. Office workers will complain about the traffic. Residents will argue that the event brings too much noise for too little benefit. Tourism officials will publish numbers that prove otherwise. But the real residue does not sit in spreadsheets. It lives in the sore muscles, the hoarse voices, the stories told in taxis and WhatsApp voice notes the next day. It lives in the fact that for one day, again, black and brown bodies took over Kingston's arteries, not as laborers headed to work, not as protesters facing tear gas, but as revelers insisting on pleasure without apology. That is not a small thing in a country whose wealth was built on forced labor and whose post-emancipation history has been one long argument over who controls land, law, and movement. The cowhead mask disappears into the dispersing crowd. No reporter interviews the person under it. No official report lists it as a noteworthy feature of Carnival 2026. Yet for anyone who knows what Jankanu looked like in the photographs and written accounts of a century ago, it is a quiet jolt. It proves that African-rooted forms in Jamaica have not simply been replaced by imported carnival, even if the billboards and travel blogs pretend otherwise. They have been folded in, hidden in plain sight, waiting for trained eyes and memories to recognize them. That leaves you with a choice more than a conclusion. When you look at Jamaica Carnival, whether from the middle of the band, from a sidewalk in Kingston, or from a hotel balcony you reached by plane, what do you see first? A carefully packaged island party, or a living fragment of African resistance that has learned how to survive inside the tourism machine.